What's up, y'all? I'm Will here with Schedule Fly, and this is the Restaurant Owners Uncorked podcast, one of the highest rated hospitality podcasts in the world, brought to you by us at Schedule Fly. We provide a very simple web-based restaurant employee scheduling software backed by legendary customer service. If you're on pencil and paper or Excel, or you're on some software with tons of bells and whistles and features you don't need or use, ScheduleFly is the perfect place for you. Easy to use, point, click, and go, and we'll take great care of you. ScheduleFly.com, free trial, check it out. Also, this podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Pop Menu and The Giving Kitchen and Kickfin, and you're going to hear about them in just a minute. First of all, let's talk about today's guest. This week we have Kristen Marvin, and this was a really cool episode. Kristen is a leadership consultant, but she spent 20-some-odd years in the hospitality world, and she worked everywhere from five-star, five-diamond to ice cream shops, and everywhere in between. She also has a No Hesitations podcast. So we did sort of like a flip the mic thing where we recorded this interview and then we turned around and had her record me telling about the Schedule Fly story. So go check out the No Hesitations podcast. Kristen is awesome, great personality, optimistic, has learned so much about leadership and coaching leadership and balancing life and hospitality over her years, is very good at being self-aware and self-reflective and always trying to figure out how to improve. And she's, over her couple of decades in this space, has learned how she can go out and help you. And I think she's awesome. I hope that we are able to get her connected with some of our Schedule Fly customers because she's doing great work. She actually listened to this podcast years ago, listened to the guys from Sweet Cow Ice Cream because she was going there to interview. And what she got from the podcast helped her learn about Sweet Cow, learn about their leadership style, learn about what they're all about. It really got her fired up about it, and it helped her in that interview, and she worked for them. That was the last place she worked until she left, and she and her husband moved to Tucson, Arizona, and she started her consulting business. So I'll let her share the whole story. Thank you all for watching. Thank you for listening, and more episodes coming soon. See ya. The busiest time of year is coming. Is your staff ready for the holiday rush? This year, give your team the gift of Pop Menu AI Answering, a simple solution for phones ringing off the hook. AI Answering handles calls 24/7, 365 days a year, so your staff can focus on in-person guests. Customize your greetings and responses, answer common questions, promote specials and events, and send follow-up links to ordering and reservations. AI Answering handles it all while escalating more complex conversations back to your team. Never miss another tasty revenue opportunity. Pop Menu, the marketing technology platform designed to make growing your restaurant easy. Discover more AI restaurant tools that turn your to-do list into an already done list by requesting a demo today. For a limited time, get $100 off your first month, plus lock in one unchanging monthly rate at popmenu.com. Go now to get $100 off your first month at popmenu.com. Be sure to tell them that Will from Restaurant Owners Uncorked podcast and Schedule Fly sent you. Y'all, this is a great business. I just told you what they like me to say. I will say that we have a lot of mutual customers at Schedule Fly with Pop Menu. They all agree. Great product, great customer service, great results. Check them out, popmenu.com. This episode is also brought to you by The Giving Kitchen. Giving Kitchen provides emergency assistance for food service workers through financial support and a network of community resources. Since its inception in 2013, Giving Kitchen has served over 15,000 food service workers and awarded over $10.5 million to food service workers in crisis. If you or someone you know is a food service worker in crisis, please ask for help. TheGivingKitchen.org, and again, that's TheGivingKitchen.org. Y'all, this is a phenomenal organization. Jen, the founder, has been on this podcast. Jen Heidinger Kendrick, check out that episode to hear their full story. But if you know somebody or you need help, go to TheGivingKitchen.org. Incredible, incredible organization and very responsive and has a wonderful mission. Check them out. We're recording a podcast. All right, podcaster to podcaster.
I'm Kristen Marvin. I am the founder and CEO of Solutions by Kristen. I partner with companies to accelerate leadership development internally so they can increase retention and operate thriving businesses. And I specialize in restaurants.
Increase retention in restaurants. Well, I can't wait to dive into that. That's quite a challenge.
It is.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And hopefully that can change, because it really can be a great career and not just a stopover, which you and I both agree with. And I know you help your clients with, and I can't wait to find out about it. You asked me about my shirt, which says 12, and I'll tell you about it. I wanted to wait until we were recording because it's a shirt for Taco Lou, which is a longtime Schedulefly customer. And they're down in Jacksonville, Florida. Incredible place. I actually got to go there. I got the shirt when I was there. So every year the PGA tournament out in TPC, they have something called Tacos on 12. So Taco Lou and his name's Don Nickel and his crew go out to the 12th hole, and they sell their tacos and their burritos out there on the 12th hole in this big tent. I mean, some crazy number that they sell on this one day. But anyway, so they created these shirts which look like the Titleist logo. Instead of saying Titleist, it says 12. But so that's what that is. I try to wear as often. I have so many shirts and hats from customers that almost daily I have on a shirt or a hat or both that, you know, are from customers, which is fun.
Yeah, I love that. My husband is a giant golfer, which is part of the reason why we moved to Tucson from Colorado. And we joke, he has his own little PGA tour every weekend. So he golfs 4 days a week. He golfs Thursday to Sunday and occasionally takes some Sundays off. But I'll have to tell him about that. So
Does he have the same group that he golfs with Thursday to Sunday, or is it
no,
just whoever?
He has one or two courses that he frequents. He likes to walk, and so his options are a little bit limited. But yeah, I mean, he's golfed with, I think he's played 150 rounds since we moved down here. So he loves to play with different people, and he's very social. So it's a great outlet for him. So yeah.
Has he been playing his whole life?
No. When did he start playing? I think we used to live in Colorado Springs. So when we were in college, we met in college, and he was playing a little bit there, and then it's just ramped up over the years. So
that's a lot of golf.
It's a lot of golf. Yeah.
Figure something out.
So yeah, good for him.
A lot of jealous people listening to this episode.
please come to Tucson and golf with my husband. Shameless plug.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. So before we get into your consulting business, you've had a long career in hospitality. So how did it get started?
Yeah, I started, I think with, like a lot of people did, cooking in my favorite Mexican restaurant when I was 15. That was my very first job after school. And it's still my favorite Mexican restaurant. I'm from a small town in Missouri called St. Joe. And it was a local family owned location called Barbosa's. It's still open. And they had two locations. I think they've got one now, but I went to school with the Barbosa family, and it was just a legendary place in town. And that's really kind of where I cut my teeth in the industry. And I bounced out of that a little bit in high school and kind of tried the retail thing. And I was very quickly bored. I needed to be moving and working hard and interacting. So I, out of high school, I moved to Colorado and got a job with Outback Steakhouse. And that's when I learned this was dating myself, 1999. Mm. And got a job serving and bartending. And I remember my first, you know, I'm an introvert, so working in a high volume restaurant really brought the extrovert out in me. And the Outback that I worked at in Colorado Springs was right next to the World Arena. It was the busiest Outback in the state. And my first night bartending, they put me in the well. We had a Matchbox 20 concert happening right next door, and we just got annihilated. And I had margarita mix and wallaby darn, you know, shit just all over me. And we got hit pretty hard for a couple hours before the show started. And I remember looking up and just saying to myself, like, I don't know what that was, but I'm hooked and I want more of it. So that kind of really started my, I think, my journey. And I got really hungry from there and started to raise my hand for more and more opportunities. And I heard about a job fair from somebody that I was working with at the Broadmoor Hotel, which was a 5-star, 5-diamond hotel right up the street in Colorado Springs.
Yes, I've heard of that.
Yeah, gorgeous 700-room property, just a beautiful place. And I went, I didn't really know what 5-star, 5-diamond meant. And I interviewed with a bartender from Ireland who was there as part of our international exchange program. And he was charming and just really sold me on the position. And they were, the hotel was in the process of renovating their cigar lounge in the main building right up the stairs or the escalator on the left. And they had just invested about $1 million into it. And it had a great story from, you know, its inception in 1918. And they were really telling that story through the build out. And they offered me a position there as a cocktail server. And I was just over the moon. I started to study wine. I wanted to become a sommelier. They had a great wine training program there. I learned about cigars, all kinds of spirits. It really just kind of opened my eyes to what great hospitality was all about and never saying no to a guest, which I loved. I mean, we would run across the lake in our high heels and our in our pantyhose and our polyester uniforms to get a bottle of wine that some guests had had the night before at a different restaurant that they wanted to have again, you know, if we didn't have it. So that was really, really, you know, a pivotal moment for me. And then when I graduated college, I studied marketing and I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I loved working in the hotel. And I went to the food and beverage manager and I said, how do I get into management here? And he said, take this, you know, go through a management training course. And I did that and I got my binder and I thought, okay, I'm ready to be a general manager. I've got all the tools I need.
Right.
I was 24. I was pretty hungry to be GM and determined. And I actually ended up becoming the general manager at that same cigar lounge and had no idea what I was doing. I made all the classic mistakes of partying with your staff and, you know, trying to learn how to become peer to leader overnight with them. And a few months down the road, the food and beverage manager came back and said, hey, we're opening this beautiful fine dining restaurant across the way in this new convention center. And Adam Tahani is designing it. He was a, you know, amazing international designer. So Jacques Pepin's son-in-law is going to be our chef. Michael Sesnick, who worked for Danny Meyer in New York at Union Square Cafe, is going to be the general manager. And we've brought on some mixologists from New York, Steve Olson and Andy Seymour. And we've got a, you know, world-class wine list. Would you be willing to come over and open this with us? And I just absolutely jumped. And that was probably the most inspirational point in my career. We get to host Jacques' 60th birthday party. And I learned so much about French cooking techniques and how to pair wine and craft cocktails, you know. And this was, again, I was in my mid-20s. So this was a completely different product for Colorado Springs, but a completely different product than anything I'd ever seen. And it really just connected me to, I think, different cultures and the foundation of where food and beverage came from. So that was awesome. My husband was selling wine for Southern Wine and Spirits to restaurants at the time. And we decided to move up to Denver. And he transferred with Southern up there and took over kind of downtown in Cherry Creek. And I saw a Craigslist ad for a restaurant that was going to open in 2 weeks, right downtown in the heart of Larimer Square, called Osteria Marco. And I interviewed with their leadership team, and they had had, it was Bonanno Concepts, they'd had a couple fine dining restaurants, but this was going to be hopefully their casual Italian high volume spot. And they had had 50% of the staff hired. And they, when I interviewed, they said, you know, we're going to have 3 different stations where food was going to come out of the kitchen. We're going to be making burrata from scratch, you know, all these beautiful charcuteries, pizzas, paninis. And that was 2007. And we were, you know, like I said, right in the heart of downtown, doing 600 covers on a Friday, Saturday night. And it was just incredible. So I ended up working with that group for about 5 years and raised my hand for some more opportunities and worked events with them, helped them drive sales, took over HR, helped oversee operations. And then we started expanding. So we opened a speakeasy, we opened a smokehouse, we opened an Asian noodle bar, and then a casual French restaurant. And my husband and I were able to become partners with them in the casual French concept and the speakeasy. And after a few, I think I was there 5 years and ready for something else. And I had known the brothers that started Snooze AM Eatery and loved their approach to hospitality, their approach to storytelling when it came to their vendors and their team, loved their approach to culture and sustainability and community. And so I had an opportunity to go run their busiest location right on 7th and Colorado. And 2 weeks after I got hired, they sat me down, took me to lunch and said, "Hey, we're expanding. We're going on a national journey here." And I was with them for 7 years, and we went from 6 to 48 locations, and I was a general manager to start and then worked my way up as a regional and oversaw Colorado and got to help with that growth, which was so special because that's where Snooze started, was right in the heart of downtown in Five Points. And so there were so many local supporters and such a huge community following. And they're still seeing that in every new community that they go into, which is great. So I was with them for 7 years. And then right before the pandemic, I got a job with Sweet Cow Ice Cream, which I know you know well. That's how I learned about you and started
Yeah,
using
sure.
Schedulefly. Yep. And met the leadership team. Actually, before I interviewed with Drew and Ross and Steve and Steph and Mo, I listened to your podcast when you had Ross and Drew on, and that kind of gave me an inside scoop and look under the hood about who they were, which was great. So thank you for that. But
How did you find it?
I think it was on their website, or I was just Googling. I was, you know, kind of
Okay.
stalking the owners and, you know, just seeing what was out there and doing as much research as I could on the company. And yeah, I just thought it was an awesome way, you know, and I know you got into podcasting, you know, way back, but it was an awesome way for me to get connected with them before I even walked in to interview, which felt really good.
I think that's brilliant. You would think that people would, I mean, I would do that in a second. I mean, we've had some CEOs on recently from like PopMenu and other companies. And if you're going to go work there, what better way to learn than to sit down and just listen to the owner or the CEO talk about the business. And you can glean so much for just the type of person they are and where their passions are and what they're all about and what they want to do. So that's awesome.
It
How cool is that?
was great. I love it, and I wish and hope that more people do that because, you know, it just gave me different perspective than what I was finding in interviews, right? Like I tend to want to know a lot about the people that I work with, and so I could spend hours just talking to them and asking them questions, but they want to know the same about me, right? So it was
Yeah,
kind of a
sure.
it was just a nice value add. So
What made you decide to go work? I mean, you were with Snooze, and was it, I bet it was, boy, I bet it was a lot going on growing like that.
yeah.
Was it a little too much? Was it just too many hours, or what made you decide to change and go to Sweet Cow?
You know, it was my first time growing that rapidly. I loved growing, you know, again with the Bonanno Group. I mean, over the course of my career, I've been able to open 12 or 13 restaurants, and I love the newness. I love the hype. I love putting everything together behind the scenes and then watching it come to life on opening day and just seeing all that hard work from the team pay off and bring those guests in. And I think for me, I wasn't open to necessarily the direction. Well, no, I can't say that. I didn't see eye to eye with some members of my leadership team, full transparency. So I really, and some of that was, you know, a lot of that was on me. There's shared responsibility there, but my mindset was not where it should have been. And I really lost a lot of confidence in myself, and I wasn't taking care of myself, and I really started to kind of pull away from the company. So I saw there was time for me to go do something different. And I love the hardest part was walking away from my team. But I was so proud of everything that we had accomplished. And I really wanted to work for, you know, a local company again. And that was really my goal from the outset of being with Snooze. And I loved being able to have, and I actually didn't realize this until I started my company last year, but I love having creativity and autonomy and empowerment to identify a problem and put a solution in place. And that changes a lot when you work for a big company, right? You don't have that autonomy, right? You've got to run things up the chain or down the chain, and then they've got to go into order of what is priority. And so when you're growing that rapidly, a lot of departments and a lot of changes are coming to you. You're not necessarily out looking for them, right? It's a completely different mentality and mindset. And so I really wanted that autonomy again. And Sweet Cow, you know, had ambitions to grow from 6 to 20 locations and keep it in Colorado. And that was really attractive to me. I love inspiring people, motivating people, developing people when they know that they can work their way up, make an impact in their local community. And so many people in Denver and Boulder love those communities and they stay there, you know, forever, which is great. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What a ride. What a journey. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you've had really a good diverse from five star, five diamond to ice cream, and everything in between. So you have had a couple of decades of experience now. So you've really got a lot under your belt to, I guess, give yourself the confidence to now that y'all have moved to Tucson to go and try to help other people learn a lot of the things that you learned along the way with your consulting business.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, I love leadership. I love leadership development. I love supporting the local community. I know how difficult it is to be, you know, a restaurant owner and try to manage everything from HR to finances to marketing to, you know, morale, hiring, interviewing, training, everything when at the end of the day, a lot of restaurateurs start the business because they love to cook or they love creating an experience for someone, right? So I have always seen a need for more leadership development resources to be available and more customized to restaurant leaders. And so that was a lot of my passion and drive in starting the business. But I also love more than anything being a strategic partner for someone who can't afford a full-time CEO or a CFO or a marketing team. And so being able to really come in with a fresh set of eyes and take a look at their businesses and streamline some systems and operations and help them grow as leaders so that they can in turn turn around and do that for their team. And also, you know, teach them how to be better leaders and implement sustainable systems is the most rewarding part of this job.
When did y'all move to Tucson? Is that when you started your consulting business? When you moved?
So we moved in August. It was actually our 15th wedding anniversary. We jumped in two separate cars and said, see you later, you know, on the drive. And we moved down here August 5th. And our goal was to take a few months off and just get acclimated with Tucson. My husband's family's down here. And so we wanted to be closer to them. And we wanted to reconnect with each other. Take a break. It was an opportunity that we'd never had or taken advantage of, I should say. And then figure out what to do next. I knew that I wanted to be connected with hospitality. I can never imagine a life where I'm not connected to it. I just love it so much. But I didn't know what that looked like yet. And I knew that I didn't want to be in operations, but I wanted to support somehow. And my husband didn't know what he wanted to do either. And so we just took some time and we really designed our lifestyle. And we said, let's get comfortable with that and then let's design our careers. And before we had left Denver, I started working with a coach. And again, something I'd never really known about, been interested in. And I said to them, you know, again, I don't know what I want to do, but I really need to get back to my purpose and my passion. And so I think about three or four sessions in, I had a great moment of insight that what I was doing with the coach was my favorite part of running restaurants, which is just working one-on-one with leaders and sitting with them with no distractions, really helping them slow down and focus on what they needed in that moment and making commitments and then holding them accountable to what they needed to do and what they wanted to do in order to get better. And so I knew that I wanted to start my coaching company and then and consulting. And that was really all I knew. And then I started it the end of last year, and I've just been learning and building a brand new community of people, you know, such like yourself, and learning from your stories and vision and figuring out what feels great and, you know, what aligns with my vision and how I want to grow this and how I can make it sustainable.
Do you work with restaurants and restaurant groups of any size, or is there a sweet spot for you, or like, how do you determine who you're going to work with?
Yeah.
Who's the best fit for what you're doing?
Yeah. Ideally it's somebody that's got a couple locations that is wanting to scale. So yeah. I have, you know, I'll tell you a couple stories. I've got a group in Denver who I'm working with right now who has 10 locations that are different, and then is also opening two different concepts completely and scaling those. So we're working together on that. I've got a client here in town that owns a beverage tea shop. They have two locations, a ghost kitchen, and they're getting ready to open number 3 in January here and scale to 4 and 5, and then wants to potentially expand further into Tucson and more into Phoenix. So again, I love helping people really create systems and look at their operations and put in plans for how to scale their businesses, how to promote internally, but stay true to their vision, stay true to their culture.
How do you find new customers? Is it all just sort of organic and networking and word of mouth and things like that? Or do you do proactive outbound?
It's a combination of things. It's really staying connected with my network in Denver that I've grown over 20 years and Colorado Springs. It's dining out, going to where the operators are, right? I've connected with some community organizations in Tucson here, Startup Tucson. I do some mentorship for their entrepreneurs. And then Tucson City of Gastronomy is where Tucson's lucky to be one of the, we were actually the first city in the U.S. to be designated by the UNESCO Foundation as the City of Gastronomy. Ourselves and San Antonio are the only two in the United States that are designated. So I'm on a committee for that organization. And then I work with Chow. I'm on the board of Chow as well in Denver, which offers mental health and substance abuse resources to people specifically in the hospitality industry. So
yeah,
again, it's about building community, but also establishing a new community, which I've done on LinkedIn a lot with the help of Jim Taylor. Huge shout out to Jim because I adore him. But I have really been looking for people that are in this space, you know, and there's some incredible people that I've been able to make connections with, and we support each other, you know, and we're constantly talking to people and finding opportunities for each other and making introductions. And I am trying to put out as much content as I can for restaurant owners and operators to help them every single day, whether it's through posting on LinkedIn, the newsletter that I have on LinkedIn, now the podcast that I started a couple months ago, I'm working on a book. And then I want to kind of create some courses from there as I continue to grow. So I'm trying to just reach, you know, as many people as I possibly can to support.
How many people, I mean, how many different customers would you ideally support at any given time?
Yeah, 10 to 15 is my sweet spot per year, 10 to 15 clients.
When you have clients in Denver, is it travel? Is it Zoom? Is it both?
Zoom. And then if I'm trying to get out there a few times a year, and so when I can meet them in person, I will do that. Obviously, you know, that's just the best way to connect with people. But I think one great thing that came out of the pandemic was we can still, you know, work together via Zoom and not have to worry about travel time, gas, flight delays, anything like that. So it's a great way to stay connected and still make progress.
Yeah, absolutely. So so tell me about the, what made you decide to start the podcast?
Oh man. When I started the business, I created a strategy just simply around connection. And yeah. I had picked up the phone, which I hadn't, and I know you were talking to Sean Walchev about this on your last episode, but I hadn't talked on the phone in years. I used to hate talking on the phone. I would text. I was so busy all the time. And I had all this time on my hands when I had, you know, when we had moved down here, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to just pick up the phone again. And I called like 300 people that I used to work with, and a lot of them didn't pick up the phone. I had to schedule time with them, you know, which was awesome. But because we're all so busy, I just spent 30, 45 minutes just catching up. And some of these people I hadn't talked to in 17 years. And I, you know, God, I had this thought of, I don't know if I can call them. It's been so long, you know, will we be connected? And it was just like picking up where we left off. And through every conversation, I got off the phone and I was just so full. I was so happy. I was like, man, I had learned things about people that I had never known when I worked with them in the restaurant, because I was so hyper rational, leave your emotions and personal stuff at the door. Let's get the job done. You know, little too extreme. And when I was like, everybody has such incredible stories, and I know how much you love storytelling. And I was like, I want to take all this networking and all these conversations that I'm having and bottle them and keep them somewhere that is evergreen. And that is a place where I can share. I think we have so much to learn from each other, and restaurant leadership is so lonely, and you're so much in your four walls. And I thought this was a really great opportunity. The podcast was a really great opportunity to share those stories with people. And I know how busy restaurant owners and operators are. And my hope was that they could take 5 or 10 minutes or 30 minutes on their drive to and from work and just connect and feel like they were a larger part of a community of people that were just like them and had gone through the challenges that they had, and offers a different layer of support.
You nailed it. I cannot tell you how many people over the years have said listening to the podcast is like therapy, because they are in their four walls, as you know well, and their sleeves are rolled up and their heads are down and they're just going through the day of owning and running a restaurant. And it's hard, hard, hard. And there's all these things, and they're sitting there going, how am I dealing with all? And then you listen to other people talk about these same challenges that you're thinking you're the only one that you're dealing with. And you're like, okay, well, no, it's not just me. It's everybody's dealing with this, all this kind of stuff. So I'm so glad. Yeah. It's like you did those conversations and you're probably like, man, I should have recorded every one of those. Like, you know, totally. Like, that would have been really good stuff. But that's what this is. Yeah. It's awesome to be able to, I would do this all day, every day, if I could figure out a way to do it. I love talking to folks like you and Sean and Jim Taylor. What a great dude. I love that guy. Came across him, you know, had him on the podcast, got to know him through LinkedIn. He's prolific on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
He really is. How did you get to know him?
So I started looking for coaches and consultants in the hospitality space on LinkedIn and following them and reading their content and seeing who I resonated with. And after I kind of got my courage up, you know, it's so funny. I look at people on LinkedIn and I used to put them on this pedestal, like they were a celebrity, you know, like untouchable. One day I was like, you know what? I'm just going to send a message and be like, hey, I love what you're doing. Can we have a conversation? I would love to learn more about you. And Jim one of the beautiful things about Jim, and he says this all the time, is he will have a conversation with anybody. And luckily for me, he was open to having a conversation. And I drilled him with questions for like an hour. And at the end, he was like, wait a minute, I don't know anything about you. Can we schedule another time? And I said, sure, in a month, you know, I'm busy. And he's like, can't we meet next week? And I was like, okay. So, you know, we had another conversation, and then come to find out, you know, the goals that I had for my business, he was like, I can help you with all of that. And that turned into an incredible opportunity. We've been working together for the last 6 months, and, you know, it just really has opened my eyes to the community and the support and the importance of putting your goals and desires out there and seeing what doors open. And he has just taught me so many things about myself and how to show up and how to keep it organic, and connected me with so many incredible people, again, like you, right? That's how we got connected. And so the amount of opportunities that he's been able to share is just incredible. And, you know, again, it's so fun to talk shop with people that are invested in hospitality and supporting. Yeah. And, you know, the podcast is another way of providing service to people, which is great. So.
Yeah. Well, big shout out to him. I have a lot of respect for that dude. I really do. I love his style, and I love what you're talking about, what you mentioned at the beginning, which is let's talk about retention and how do we attract good people to this industry and provide them something that I want to ask you about, because you mentioned this earlier. And I think this is such an important part of this industry. It's hard, but you mentioned self-care was an issue. You weren't taking care of yourself when you know, and one of the things that is so challenging, I think, about hospitality is that the whole industry is based on giving. It's giving yourself, giving your time, giving your love, giving your passion, your energy, your mind share. It's focusing on others and bringing them in and making them feel welcome and giving them a great experience. And it's, you know, the industry for the longest time really was this sort of work hard, play hard place, and it caused burnout, it caused substance abuse, it caused all kinds of mental health issues. And I think the industry collectively is you know, moving forward in a positive direction, but on the individual level, it's hard, and it's can be challenging to take care of yourself and give yourself what you need, which is ironically the most important thing, because it's like the whole thing when they say, you know, you put you on the airplane, they're like, if you got a kid with you, you take the oxygen first, right? And then you hand it over, because you got to give yourself what you need so that you can give others. I find that a lot of people in this world that I've gotten to know over the last 16 years, I see that. I see them giving everything to others, and I'm always like, take care of you. Like, focus on you. And this is a long-winded way to get back to what I was going to ask you about, is you have to be able to do that as an owner and a manager and a leader, and then find a way to give people opportunities to turn this into a career, not just a stopover place, because it can be a massively rewarding, professionally, personally, financially, everything you'd want out of a career, particularly if you align yourself, as you've done a good job of over the years, of groups where there's room to grow, and there's always good restaurants that this person owns one and they want to get it to two, and then they want to get it to five and 10, whatever. There's always opportunities to grow, but it's a grind and it's hard, and it spits people up and spits them out. And what you and Jim and a lot of your peers are doing is trying to help people realize it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many important points you hit on.
I went through a lot there, sorry.
On a couple episodes, but you know, the grind is really, has always been the mentality, and there has to be a mindset shift amongst restaurant owners. You know, like you said, taking care of yourself as a leader is the most important thing, and you can't give to your team if you're not giving to yourself first. And it's funny, I actually have work hard, play hard tattooed on the back of my neck, because I used to love the grind. That was what drove me. I'm super competitive and I loved working hard. However, I will say, when I was exercising and taking care of myself and running high volume restaurants, I was performing the best in my career because I had fresh eyes. I was engaged. I was present. I was cheery. I was positive. I had energy for my team and for the guests. And I was able to pivot because I could recognize problems or be proactive when I needed to. And in the times when I wasn't taking care of myself and I let that stress and anxiety build up and I was drinking too much and I wasn't sleeping and I was eating like crap, that was when I was performing the worst and my mindset went down the toilet. You know, I talk a lot about mental fitness and mental health. It all starts in your gut. And if you're feeding yourself booze and you're feeding yourself garbage food and you don't have great eating habits in place and you're not hydrated, you're not sleeping well, it goes straight to your brain. And those, you know, I think employees want a great experience. You know, they are attracted to, you know, you know it in a second when you walk into a restaurant, if the employees are happy or not, you know, in the first couple of seconds when you walk in the door.
Yep.
And you can feel that energy, you feel that vibe, you know it in the food, the way that it looks, the way it was prepared, the way that the staff talks about it, if they're willing to engage with you. People want to work in a place where they feel valued, but they also feel like they're a part of something bigger and that they are respected, you know. And there's Sweet Cow taught me a lot about this. Working with a generation of people that are in high school and college, and I've got a client here in town that's got the same employee base. Man, what I love about this generation is they are teaching us and challenging us on running business differently. They are setting boundaries. They know the schedule that they want. They're sticking to it. They're not willing to take work home with them. They are not wanting to work more than 40 hours a week. They want time off. They, you know, if their schedule says they're done at four, they're done at four and they're clocking out and they're leaving, you know? So they're challenging restaurants to really hire more people and be smarter about how they're writing schedules and when and where they're using their labor. And they want a great training experience, you know, out of the gate. They want what you're selling to them in the interview process to be true to the experience that they are going to have when they are an employee for you. And I have found that, you know, those places like Sweet Cow and my client here, you know, yes, 99% of their team are part-time and they work 2 to 3 days a week, which presents its own challenges, right? From an operational standpoint, but that has challenged them to put systems in place in order for shifts to run smoother and expectations to be clearer. And that leads to better employee performance and happiness, which ultimately leads to guest satisfaction, which of course leads to the bottom line, right?
All right, y'all, it is time for a little mid-episode break. We're going to talk about Kickfin. Thousands of restaurants, bars, and breweries use Kickfin to tip out their employees instantly. No cash required. With Kickfin, tips go directly to your employees' bank of choice the second their shift ends. It's a really simple solution to a really big problem because if you're still paying out credit card tips in cash, it's costing you. Time-consuming bank runs and cash counting take managers away from work that matters. Cash is hard to track, which leads to accounting headaches, and it creates the perfect opportunity for theft, human error, and compliance issues. Bottom line, there's never been an instant secure way to pay out tips until Kickfin. It's an easy-to-use software that sends real-time, cashless tip payouts straight to your employees' bank accounts, 24/7, 365. Kickfin gives managers hours back in their day, makes reporting a breeze, and protects your business from risk. Most importantly, employees love it. Restaurants can have Kickfin up and running overnight. Employees can enroll in seconds. No hardware, no contracts, no setup fees. Visit kickfin.com for a personalized demo. See how restaurants across the country are digitizing tips with Kickfin. All right, that's what they asked me to say, so I say it, and it tells the story very well, but I like to add this in. We referred a customer that we know and love very well, SupDogs, to Kickfin. SupDogs has been a customer for a super long time. Trust them very much with their opinion on these types of tools. They started using Kickfin. I asked Brett, the owner, recently how it's going. He said, Kickfin is perfect. It's going great. Exactly what we were hoping for. So there you go. Kickfin.com, y'all. Check them out. Well, you know who's figured that out? I mean, all the way at one end of the spectrum is Chick-fil-A. I mean, they have one of my kids worked there last summer. I mean, they have tons and tons of employees on the roster and in the rest. I mean, you go to a Chick-fil-A. Did they have Chick-fil-A out where you are in Tucson?
They do. You know, I've never been to a Chick-fil-A, so maybe I'll go after our conversation. I always see the lines.
It's just amazing to watch what they're able to do with, like, just tons of people. And it's just a very, very different experience if you go there and then you go across the street to, I don't know, Burger King or whatever, and there's two people. You know, I mean, like, that's going to all go, they'll go, all those, they'll just go to equipment, like robots and, like, yeah. Why even bother having people? But then, to your, like, you can have the other end of that is have a whole lot of people that aren't working all the time, that have the right boundaries, that have the right schedules, that have the right training, that have the right mentality. And, you know, and you go in there and you're like, everybody does. They seem happy and it goes quickly and it's consistent and all that. So, I mean, you can do it, and you can do it even at that end of the spectrum in sort of a fast food world. I feel like hospitality, to me, I mean, what I've come to learn over the years is, you know, nowadays, like, of course you have to get the food right and the ambience and everything else, but this is a people business. I mean, it is a full on people business, and you nailed it. You walk into a place, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you go into a place, the food, of course, has got to be good, but the food can be great, but you got people that are unhappy, burned out, tired, stressed, hate their manager, don't want to be there, you know, just staring at the clock, ready to just bolt as soon. I mean, that's, the guest feels that, and the food can be awesome, but they're not coming back. I mean, you know, particularly now, I mean, there, it's, you know, like, you're, you may, maybe people go out a little bit less now. And if so, then you better be on your game when they come and treat that staff really, really well. And, you know, and you touched on a lot too. So I got to ask you about this, because you were talking about the gut brain connection. And I mean, look, we could do a whole episode on that, so we won't, but I'm obsessed with nutrition and fitness. Yeah. And boy, I got to tell you, I mean, I think that's a big challenge if you're working in restaurants, because you're around food and alcohol all the time. And to me, I think it would be hard. It'd be hard not to, like, you'd have to have a lot of discipline, a whole lot of discipline.
Yeah, I wrote about this last week in my newsletter. Jim and I were actually talking about this last week too. I started drinking in restaurants when I was 19. Our bar manager at the end of the night would sit down and have a drink, and that was my first exposure to it. And then everybody would go out afterwards, and I was like, man, these people really like each other. You know, they want to hang out inside of work and outside of work. This is great. And, you know, I've been working in restaurants for 20 years. So I was looking at a menu of 20 items every day or more, getting to choose whatever I wanted, you know, for staff meal. And that's one of the great benefits of working in a restaurant, is being able to have this incredible food all the time, you know, 2 to 3 times a day, but they're huge portions. Mm. You're shoveling food in as fast as you can, because you don't know if you're going to get a break or not. My co-host on our first episode was talking about walking into a restaurant here, looking for the event coordinator to book an event, and watching her sit on a milk crate in the corner, shoveling a bowl of pasta in her mouth, because she couldn't find a place to sit down, because you don't sit in the dining room. No, you're not allowed to be seen eating. You know, the guests don't want to see that. It's what we've always been taught. And you don't sit at the bar. You know, and if you're on a wait, you can't take up that real estate, right? So I learned a lot of really bad habits. And so when I got out of the industry, and we moved down here, health was such a huge goal of mine. And so I've spent the last year and a half studying nutrition, meeting with nutritionists. You know, I had 40 pounds to lose, and just really wanted to understand how what I was putting in my body was fueling me, what foods were giving me what nutrients, what supplements I needed, and how to really just start listening to my body and paying attention to the energy levels. Because for me, when I was, not taking care of myself, the most frustrating thing was constantly telling myself, I want to do more. I know I can do more, but I don't have the energy to do more. And that was a lot of the drive, you know, and I wanted to get back into racing. And so that takes fuel, you know, and I had to change my relationship to food and see it as fuel, not as sport. You know, my husband being in the wine business and myself in the restaurant business, we would go out to happy hour 3 to 4 days a week, and we'd go out to dinner 3 to 4 days a week. And I was eating in restaurants, you know, every single day. So I had to teach myself how to cook, how to shop, how to portion, what was healthy, how to stay focused in the produce section, how to eat colors. I mean, all these things that you would think, oh, you worked in a restaurant, you know that. It's just different. So
challenging to do when you're in the business. Very challenging to do.
When you're working for great chefs and, man, the menu's always changing. It's seasonal and, you know, chef's bringing in a new foie or, man, you're eating duck confit or hanger steak or it's, yeah. I mean, I would always go for flavor. I've never looked at salads on a menu until now, you know?
Yeah.
It's tempting.
You said you're getting back into racing. Is that cycling or running?
Running. Yeah. I've got a half marathon this weekend. So I'm going to hope to work up to a full and then an ultra. So we'll see what my body wants to do. So
look at you, competitive. You're already thinking about the ultra. Have you done a half marathon before?
Yeah, it's been about 10 years.
Okay. So you used to do races?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And that was part of, you know, working with the restaurants. You talk about a retention standpoint, you know, we joined an athletic center. We had a corporate membership when I worked for the Banana Group, and we would do fitness competitions together and do yoga together and have some fun competing against each other for how many times we could punch in and punch out and bust each other's balls for, like, you can't just punch in and do an executive workout, which was sauna, steam room, hot tub. You know, you couldn't do that. You had to actually work out. And then, you know, when I was at Snooze, a lot of us, gosh, we had yoga benefits. There was, a lot of us would put together softball teams, dodgeball teams. We'd run relay races together. So it was a really important part of our culture, which was great, you know, and in the brunch world, you're up early anyway, you know, and so you get off work and then you still have time to go work out afterwards and be together and make it not so much about happy hour. So that was a healthier lifestyle.
Like, what is your biggest concern about the industry right now?
It's a really tough question to pick one. I think it's that old school mentality. I think it's people not wanting to adapt to this new generation. You know, I've heard so many restaurateurs that I've talked to say, I don't know how to engage with these people. I don't know. I don't have anything in common. I don't understand why they're telling me no. And again, it's just because they're setting boundaries and they're forcing us to hire more people than we ever have before. And that's difficult. And, you know, it's challenging restaurateurs to have to teach things that they haven't had to teach, right? There's been, for years, we've had people in the industry that have had experience and now we don't. And, you know, I was 18 once and somebody taught me what hospitality was. I didn't know what great food was. I didn't know what great service was. I was quiet and shy. And we have to teach people what hospitality is if we want to continue to keep it thriving. That's the biggest challenge that scares me is I don't want people to give up on it. I don't want people to, I know that the trend is convenience. And like you said earlier, the Burger Kings and McDonald's of the worlds are putting in the robots and going conveyor belt and order kiosks and not allowing people inside. And I don't want that convenience to overpower hospitality, because hospitality doesn't exist without human connection, you know, like Danny Meyer says.
Yeah, I feel like everything's just kind of bifurcating. You've got the ease and convenience and quickness of automation and DoorDash and all this kind of stuff, but it, one thing that's never going to go away is we want our places, our look. I mean, I think this is a great thing in a lot of ways for independent restaurants. It's just that if you figure it out and you know how to do it right, we always want the places that we go that are in our city or in our town where we can feel like they know us, where they recognize us, where we can celebrate, where we can mourn, where there's consistency. The people of, you know, we know the people there. They're part of our community. They invest in our community, and they hire great people and take great care of us. We always, always want that. I mean, it's been around forever, and it'll be around forever. There'll always be a demand for that. But it is definitely changing, because most of those places did have those people that, you know, was like, hey, this is the deal. And, you know, I'm the boss, I'm in charge, I say this, do that. And, you know, this generation is definitely not operating in that, because they have choices. I'm not working there, I'll just go somewhere else. It's hard though. I mean, it's a tough thing, especially when you've been, you know, I know I talked to a lot of it, and you've been doing it for 30 or 40 years. It's challenging to change. But it's also a prerequisite for survival and thriving going forward with.
Yeah. I mean, I know Sweetcow's not in the restaurant space, but they kill it when it comes to attracting great talent. Yeah. And again, they're very well staffed. They always interview. They're always hiring. You know, they have to hire so many people every single year because of the turnover, and again, part-time people. But, you know, they have siblings and cousins and relatives that come work there. And it's a fun environment, and the money's great, but it's not necessarily all about the money for the team. They love working there. They love working together. They do a great job of building community, and, you know, they've really got a clear understanding of what characteristics they're hiring for. And it really sets their management team up for success on what a great employee looks like. And their training is just incredible. So shout out
to them. How many locations do they have now?
Seven.
Okay. Yeah. And they want 20 in Colorado. That's the deal.
Yeah. That was the goal. Yeah. A couple of years ago. So not sure if anything's changed, but yeah, the seven and three trucks.
Okay.
So yeah, they're a beast.
They make some darn good ice cream, I'll tell you that.
I can't find anything that it comes close to it. Yeah, we're going back to Denver next month. I'm super excited.
Oh, you are going back to Denver?
Yeah, I've got a leadership workshop out there. And yeah, my husband's already like, what's on the menu? What flavors are we going to go get? You know, where are we going to store all this stuff? Can we ship it back home? I'm like, we'll figure it all out.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's so cool. Yeah, we've been really lucky. We've had a lot of success in Denver and Boulder. And I always say, I mean, it is collectively the coolest group of restaurant people anywhere. I mean, just people. Like, I mean, I've just made good friends with a lot of these folks outside of Schedule Fly. Just amazing people out there. And really rising tide lifts all boats kind of mentality, just in general, and well-intentioned. And it's a great place to be. So glad you're able to, it's cool that you're able to do your business from where you are with people there. As you said, you know, through the positive sides of, you know, there's a lot of negative sides of a lot of this technology. I mean, I'm a guy who still, you know, I carry a flip phone. I don't like a lot of it, but this is great. You and I can sit here and do this, and you can serve clients all over. What else do we want to talk about? I know we're going to change gears here in a minute. We're going to flip the screen or flip the mic or whatever, but what else do you want to talk about today before we do that?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to tell my story and dive in here. I'm excited to share your story. I don't think that there's anything else.
I mean,
that
you can
I really
serve.
Had. I didn't have an agenda, but
you can serve people anywhere, then, really, can't you?
Yeah, I've had clients in Kansas City. You know, some of the employees that I worked with, you know, they've moved to different states. So my goal is to work with people on a national level and international level, as well, which is part of the, you know, the LinkedIn reach. And obviously I'm connecting with some people from the UK, on the podcast, and, trying to get in with, you know, we're having, the James Beard organization come down here, in a couple of weeks, and I'll be able to spend some time with them. So, you know, I would love to travel and work with people one-on-one in any capacity, across the nation. You know, it's some people will say, well, and I work with people outside of restaurants too. I coach people in tech. I coach people in nonprofits. I coach people that are nurses in construction, in the construction industry. So it, you know, coaching is not necessarily about the industry. It's about the entire person. And so my target is very much, and my passion is very much with restaurants, but I've got a handful of clients right now outside of that industry, which is, it's just eye-opening because at the end of the day, it's leadership, right? We're humans. It's this, it's about problem solving. It's about communication. It's about the soft skills. And if we can all become a little bit more self-aware of who we are, it's such an incredibly powerful tool to build our confidence and to identify blind spots. And the, I feel strongly that the more that we learn about ourselves, the more that we can serve other people, invest in other people, and help them identify ways that they can grow and learn as well.
Ego is the Enemy is a book by a guy named Ryan Holiday. And I think that's, it's a stoic, you know, thought, but you know, your ego can prevent you from growing and excelling by not being self-aware and not recognizing the things that, you know, sometimes we just, our ego gets in the way of just saying, you know, man, I'm not good at this. And that's so liberating and freeing when you, and I've been on the other side of this. So I speak with experience. I mean, I try to have this conversation with my kids now, like the most rewarding thing you can do is just have the confidence to say, I don't know, I'm not good. Like I need help. You know, those are not signs of weakness. They are signs of strength. And that opens up tons of opportunities from a leadership perspective, like you said, when you can be self-aware. And so I am with you 100%. I literally had a conversation. I'm in Charlotte, and I went to this small school called Davidson College, like 40 minutes up the road. And I was there this morning, and I was meeting with the development lady there. And I'm kind of like pouring, they have an entrepreneur center. So I'm like all jacked up about it. I'm really excited about it. I'm pouring a lot of energy into it. And I was like, look, Annie, I'm a lot. Like, I get it. Like, I can be overwhelming. So when you need to tell me to put the brakes on, just tell me. Like, I'm so aware of it. Like, it's totally cool. Cause I know I just bring like maybe sometimes too much energy to stuff. So I, you know, like, but that's good when you're, you know, that's how you learn and how you get better and grow. So, well, how can people find you?
Yeah. My cell phone number is 719-494-6074. LinkedIn is a place I'm at. I'm, available all the time. At Kristin-Marvin, and my first name is spelled Christin. And you can also contact me at kristinmarvin.com/contact.
That's really awesome. I'm glad you gave your cell phone out. I love doing that. And people are always worried. They're like, oh, don't, you know, you're lucky if it gets used. Like you want people to call it. Like that's cool. I love that you did all the phone calls too. Because I'm on this thing, I it's too hard to text. So I do a lot of phone calls and I love it. I think it's great. I think real conversations are just awesome.
Yeah, I love your story about the flip phone and the guy walking in going, oh, I might see you back in 30 days. But it sounds like you've stuck with it.
It's been over 3 years now. Yeah. It has its challenges at times, but I mean by and large, I mean I'm not going back. It's definitely been a good thing. Well, God, this is awesome. I'm so glad that we got connected. What a cool story. That's so I love that you listened to the podcast and listened to them and then learned. And that's really cool. I've never heard anybody that's done that before. Maybe there has been people, but I've never heard that. What a good best practice.
I think you helped me get the job. So thank you.
good. All right. Well, we'll call that a wrap. I appreciate it. I appreciate the time. Appreciate the all the work you're doing for this industry that we both love. You've been an insider and you loved it from the inside. I've loved it from the outside, but I do truly believe that part of the reason that you're able to do what you do now and you can coach people in lots of different industries, no matter what they do, is that, boy, do you learn a lot about people and yourself, and you learn all the, like working in a really well-run restaurant or restaurant group, you're going to have to master so many skill sets, soft skills, hard skills, people skills, communication skills, sales skills, operational skills, budgeting. I mean, good grief. Like, what other industry do you learn that many things and have to figure it out and balance all that at once? So it really does. I've talked about this. I've written blog posts about this. And I'm two for three. I mean, my third kid is 14, so we'll see. But I mean, I've always said I want all of my kids to at least work a job, a summer job, do something in restaurants, because you interact with both customers and your staff, your fellow employees from all walks of life. You learn how to deal with all kinds of people, and you learn how to, if you can master all this stuff and do it when things are hopping and it's very stressful, and you can learn to stay calm, it like you can do anything. It's like a superpower once you master how to like manage, you know, being in a really successful, high volume, high capacity, you know, hopping restaurant. You learn all those skills, you can do anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank
like
you
start
so
your
much.
Own consulting business.
Yeah. I mean, I've been used to managing so many different things, and yeah, it's incredible to be able to take all the skills that I've learned and the knowledge and form it into something beautiful. And that's why people start their own businesses, right?
That's exactly right. Well, congrats on that. And thank you.